Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day. Welcome to Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. Produced by Shark Creative, made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that service built. By Lipolis Electric, don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis. By Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard. By White Plains Hospital and by Michael Labriola, landscape design and construction of Armonk, plus Tompkins Mayopac Bank. I'm John Marino, and this is the Cup of Joe political show. We are joined by 91st District Assemblyman Stephen Otis. Steve Otis represents the Sound Shore area of Westchester. Steve Otis, welcome back to Westchester Talk Radio. We know it's a busy time of year for you. The session in Albany just wrapped up, yet you are back at home now. And you stay, when back at home in your district, you're pretty much busier than ever during summer.
Well, I think that now we're all experiencing the fact that the world is opening up, so there are events, and it is a thrill to see human beings in person. But it's busy. There's work going on, and I think one of the biggest outgrowths of our legislative session is really hitting now, which is a lot of these COVID relief programs, small business grants, $800 million in grants for small business, other kinds of aid for restaurants, for arts organizations, for live performance entities, whether they be not-for-profit or for-profit. And a lot of the work that we did in the budget, creating those programs that are once-in-a-lifetime programs to deal with getting people successfully through COVID, those programs are being rolled out now in terms of an application process with different state agencies. And part of the job that I've been doing is trying to get that word out to all the entities that are and individuals that are eligible for the programs. And in fact, just last week, Senator Shelley Mayer and I co-hosted a webinar on a lot of these programs. We're doing this week with the county a Spanish language version of that webinar, and we just want to get the resources to people and to businesses that need them.
Mm-hmm. You did two webinars recently with Shelley Mayer, State Senator Shelley Mayer, who represents the 37th State Senate District, which overlaps much of your area in the 91st Assembly District. You did the small business seminar, the webinar, and you also did a webinar on the state budget recently, too, an overall look at the budget.
Yeah. Well, it's, again, the budget, I think, was the centerpiece of our work this year. One of the things, and I'm on the Education Committee, Shelley is chair of the Education Committee in the Senate. One of the big priorities was funding for school districts, and it is one of the issues I have been devoted to is trying to get foundation aid, which is the main kind of school aid that all school districts get, low percentage foundation aid districts to try and get their numbers up. And Shelley on the Senate side has been a big advocate for this. And so we had a big boost this year to get districts at least up to 60%. Next year it'll be 80. 3 years from now, 100% of what they are due. And this is a very important increase for school districts that actually in the last 10 years had to cut back programs, that lost a lot of art, music, other kinds of programs, lost staff, and it's allowing some of these districts to reconstitute what is the basic but very essential program that they have.
Is education enough of a focus around this state?
I think that education is actually, for any state legislator, anywhere in the state, if they're not focused on the needs of the school districts that they represent, they don't have their priorities straight. It has really always been a number one priority for me, and I'm on with, during the course of the year, with superintendents and with school board members and with teachers and with parents about the different issues that have come up, especially during the year of COVID, because other than running a healthcare institution, running a school district and trying to make all that work safely and dealing with parents that want their kids in the classroom, parents that want their kids only remote, teachers in the asking the same question. For a school superintendent to try and a school board to try and organize all that in a rational way, a very difficult challenge. And mm-hmm. I think they worked very hard to make decisions that were right for each individual school district that they represent. But I think as a state legislator, we try and help when they need help. And we did some good things this year in the budget to accomplish that.
You've been at the forefront of trying to get broadband all the way around New York State for all kids around the state to be able to tap into what they need from home, at home, especially if we ever have to go through what we went through the past year again, where kids have to be educated from home for the most part. Are we close to the day where every kid has what they need at home around the state, or is there still work to be done?
Well, and this is a big issue, not just for school children, but for adults, and that is my initiative this year to create a state digital inclusion grant program, which was in this year's budget and is following a national movement. In terms of what we're doing, we have a long ways to go. I think the school districts did a very good job of providing kids with devices for families where kids did not have their own device to be able to work remotely. One of the challenges was getting the broadband access into all of those homes. And different school districts tried to tackle that in different ways. But you have the device. Even in Westchester, there are places where broadband access of the speed that you need is not necessarily there. So there's a lot of work to be done, not just in the schools, but broadband access statewide is certainly an issue I'm working on with my colleagues, but also trying to get digital literacy in the hands of all New Yorkers, especially during the pandemic. The need to be able to get on a computer and access COVID testing or COVID vaccines, people were at great disadvantage if they didn't have an access to that world. So this is a continuing challenge, but something I was on the phone yesterday with the folks from a national group, the National Digital Inclusion Alliance, that I've been working with this year on trying to bring knowledge and tools from around the country to New York State, and that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. During the session, you did a lot to help renters, to help landlords, to help people who live somewhere, people who own a business and maybe needed some help with their rent and with their payments, et cetera, their insurance, everything that goes into a business. Talk about that.
Well, one thing that is just so significant and something that I advocated for strongly, and I'll mention Senator Pete Harkin from the northern part of the county, because we actually had legislation in early in the session calling for a grant program to deal with small business needs. And that is what is in the state budget, $800 million in grants. But for small businesses, what can they use that grant money for? And it's quite a long list of things that they may have incurred costs during the pandemic. So it could be to help them with some of their back rent is an eligible expense, back utilities, back insurance, other kinds of operational costs to try and be part of the equation of making these businesses whole. Very difficult. We have a lot of businesses that have slowed down, have downsized, but are still working to try and come out of this in good shape. And I'm on an assembly task force that is working on these issues, not just in the budget that we've adopted, but going forward to try and make changes to help these folks survive throughout the state. And in Westchester, we had orange zone. We had an orange zone in Port Chester. We had a yellow zones in four other locations in Westchester that affected businesses significantly.
How much did federal stimulus money play into the new state budget and into what you did overall in Albany?
Well, the federal government, our congressional representatives, and our senators, Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, for the areas that I represent, Congressman Bowman, Congressman Jones, really significant money for municipalities, for school districts, for the state government. But separate money is going to the locals. And, you know, you think back really to the New Deal and the crisis of the Great Depression and what we were hit with last year. Only the federal government can step in and play the role that no state could possibly play. And that is what has happened to some degree last year, certainly in the rescue plan that was adopted early this year, but with the payroll protection actions last year, very important. So we need them to play that role. And I think the money that's here now is money that is not to be spent all at once. It generally is going to be spent over 2 or 3 years, depending upon the program. And so that means for school districts and local governments, wise planning on how they deal with the federal funds that they're receiving. And for the state, a lot of that is helping fund the relief programs that that we have for small business, for renters, for landlords. It's an important partnership.
Is New York State getting its fair share from the feds?
I think we're doing well. And I think we're you know, you go back to Pat Moynihan, who did the seminal work that still makes sense, which is New York is a state that sends more money to the federal government than we get back. And so that's a job our Washington representatives are continuing to push back on. But we received significant help that allowed us to write the state budget, to write the budget of school districts, and I think we're very appreciative. It is very important at this moment in time.
Pat Moynihan attended the same high school as my father did, the old Benjamin Franklin in East Harlem, as a matter of fact.
Very, so, very nice.
Yeah, both proud graduates of Ben Franklin High. Steve Otis is an assemblyman in Westchester County representing the 91st Assembly District, the Sound Shore area here on Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. Steve Otis, did Governor Cuomo's ongoing legal situation, in your mind, influence or affect the way he was able to negotiate or maybe not negotiate in a way he has done in the past?
Yeah, I really don't think it changed the operation of the negotiations, whether for the budget or for the end of session. I think that the governor is and his budget director and his top lieutenants are aggressive negotiators and working things out. But I think that that's the process. And I would say, having seen a number of governors and many legislatures dealing with governors, that tension is always there. It's sort of built into it. But I don't think that he was hampered in this year's process. And I think there was a lot of unity in terms of trying to deploy these resources for the business community, for individuals, for education. So I think we got to a good place and an amicable budget.
I think we've talked about this before. Nary a week goes by where we don't see some gun incident of some sort and a major gun incident. How much, and New York is amongst the toughest when it comes to gun control, how much did discussion about gun control legislation, further legislation, play in during the session? And I think we take it from the standpoint of a lot of people think, well, you're trying to take my guns away. It's not about taking people's guns away. It's about making sure those who have guns are capable of handling them in the right way.
Yeah, you know, it's a challenge. And I think, you know, New York, we took strong action on assault weapons. And so, you know, if you look around the country and you see these tragedies, but you actually see fewer of the assault weapons killings in New York than you do in other places because we have those laws. We see a lot of handgun violence. Their guns are readily accessible even with New York's rules. I think one thing that came up in one of the cases in another state this year was they had a red flag law. They had a law that we passed one in New York a couple of years ago, which is basically if somebody is showing indications that they're sort of losing it and they have guns, that there's a process where a family member could go to the court or to the police and or someone else in the community and have those guns temporarily taken away. So we had what we've seen, even in states where they have these laws, people aren't necessarily realizing they're on the books or using them, but a situation where family members, you know there's a problem, want to do something, we've given them a tool in New York, and it is a humbling and scary at the same time that we are at risk to an increase in gun violence, even with the laws that we have passed. And we're going to have to continue to deal with it as the issues come up. Very serious, and people feel for their safety.
Does the federal government need to get a lot more involved on this issue? For example, you could live in Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, where the gun laws are a lot more lax. You're not aware of what the gun laws might be up here in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. You come up here, you're found with a gun, maybe going through a security checkpoint at an airport. You have a legal problem here if you come from down south and you come up here and do this and you say, well, I didn't know what the gun laws were in Newark, New Jersey, or in Port Chester, New York, or in Hartford, Connecticut. Do we need to make this a bit more uniform and get everybody on the same page about this?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing the federal government should get back into is a federal assault weapons ban. And we had a ban from 1994 to 2004. It was allowed to expire. And since 2004, there have been millions of assault weapons sold across this country, not in New York since we took action. But, an individual sort of loses control and wants to do something crazy, the fact that they have such a deadly, basically military-style weapon at their hands means that the police are at a disadvantage when coming upon the scene, and many more innocent people are going to die. And so these are not weapons that should be legal. But I bemoan the fact that since 2004, millions have been sold, and they're really going to continue to be out there. So it's a moment for pause and reflection.
As pandemic restrictions continue to lift, I know, and you alluded to this at the start of our show, that you've been getting out there a bit more and meeting people. There was an event in Rye Brook that really made you smile.
Well, kudos to the village of Rye Brook, Mayor Paul Rosenberg, village administrator Chris Bradbury, and their whole team, because they needed to replace their public works facility, and they did a multi-year project and have a brand new facility, beautifully designed, that's going to serve the taxpayers well. It protects the neighborhood. Really was so well done, and it just shows you what good planning can bring. And so congratulations to everyone in the village of Rye Brook and to the officials that really made a very special thing happen. They're going to get better service. It's great for the employees working out of the location, the workspace, the repair space, everything is, having been in many former mayor, having been in DPW garages in a number of communities, you appreciate how rare it is that a community has an opportunity to start from scratch and design it with the best in knowledge that they have. So that was a fun event to be at, but we're all opening up mostly with outdoor events, and it's nice to see people and to engage with people and to be able to smile and say hello and give somebody a hug and
take a hand too, right?
It is good, we also still maintain a certain level of care. We think we're through the pandemic, but there's still some cautionary notes out there. So mostly for if everyone is vaccinated, you're in pretty good shape. It's the people that have not been able to or have chosen not to get vaccinated that are really at the highest risk. In fact, there was an article in the paper last week that basically every single person now that is dying from COVID is a non-vaccinated person. And mm-hmm. so that should be a message. If you had second thoughts, it is something you should reconsider. And it is a way to protect yourself, but also protect people that you engage with and family members.
And the quicker we can get as many people as possible vaccinated, we've had so many so far, the quicker we can get back to, I think, our normal lives, our normal way of operation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I would say we all know people that we lost in the last year and a half, and very sobering people that we lost from COVID directly, but also it seems to me, I know people who passed away in the last year and a half. It seems like just with everything going on, more volume of people passing even from other causes than normally would have been the case. So a time for reflection and to make sure that in terms of our health practices, that when there's the next kind of pandemic or communicable disease, that we're a little smarter and quicker to respond and better suited to make sure that we can not have the spread that we've had. And you look right now in Europe, there's a resurgence of, right. of some pockets of the disease. So we have to stay alert as to what comes next.
And in Israel and Australia as well, too. So it is something we have to continue to fight against. The fight is not over. Or if somebody says to me, why should I get a vaccine, John? I say 4 million people have died around the world. If, you know, if you needed any kind of evidence about getting a vaccine, that's all I need. And I hope that makes an impression on you, too. And I hope that everybody who does not have a vaccine as of yet is able to, you know, really sit down, think about it, and it's not about you, it's about public health, and that's the first thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I would say when I got my second shot, the nurse or technician that administered it, I didn't even know he had done it, so it was totally...
It happened to me on the first one, yeah.
he said, you're done, and I was still waiting for the prick of the needle, but...
Uh-huh.
It's thank God for medical science and for the fact that people figured out how to come up with a vaccine as quickly as they did. You know, a lot to be said for that.
Yep. Hats off to them. By the way, Steve Otis, I know you're a real community guy. You get out there and about whenever you're in town and around the area. What is your contact information?
So our office is in Port Chester. We're in the same office as the Village of Port Chester, or same building as the Village of Port Chester and the Town of Rye, which is 222 Grace Church Street. Our phone number is 939-7028. And our email address is otiss@nyassembly.gov. And call with bill ideas, call if you need help. We've had in recent days calls from, we're still dealing with the unemployment insurance calls and with other kinds of COVID issues that come up, but dealing even while it's a federal issue, we've had a few people coming in, very difficult getting passports renewed, big backlog there, and working with our congressional offices there are new demands there, and so we're trying to help individuals. But we take anything where people need help, we'll try. I have a good team in my office, and work on a lot of these directly myself, and we want to get satisfaction for people.
And Lisa Urban in your office too, right? Hats off to her.
He's chief of staff, and Verena Arnable and Gene McCaffer are my triple threat of a really great staff, and they're all very, very dedicated, and we're busy.
No doubt about that. Steve Otis, thank you for all you do. Great to have you here again on Westchester Talk Radio. Steve Otis, 91st District Assemblyman, representing the Sound Shore area here on WestchesterTalkRadio.com. A Cup of Joe Political Show. I'm John Marino. Steve, hope to talk to you again soon, and have a great summer.
John, thank you very much. It's very good. Look forward to doing it again. You take care as well.
All right. We'll see you out there, I'm sure, somewhere during the summer. Thank you. Steve Otis here on Westchester Talk Radio, produced by Shark Creative, made possible by Robeson Oil, the house that service built, and by Lipolis Electric. Don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis. By Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth through a fiduciary standard. By White Plains Hospital. By Michael Labriola Landscape Design and Construction in Armonk. And by Tompkins Mayopac Bank. Catch all of our Westchester, Rockland, Fairfield, and Orange, Dutchess, and Putnam County Talk Radio on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube. Download the app. It's called Westchester Talk.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio.
Powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative.
And made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.